Hi, this is John Thompson with Passion Nerdly, and this is our submission for our podcast, Tome Travelers. The hosts of the show are Roxanne Thompson and John Thompson, and this is another show based in Houston, Texas. The synopsis of the show is that it's usually a two-part episode. The first episode, we go over and discuss the historical facts and things surrounding an RPG that is not usually played or out of print or not really well known. We discuss time period, creation, things of that nature. And then our next episode is usually a character creation episode where we actually look at the mechanics and decide, did this game really achieve, do what it set out to do? Here's our submission, Tome Travelers. We hope you like it. I love this series. This is probably one of my favorite series. It is a D20 game, but there's something about it that just captures so much for me. Now, I love spy stuff in general. Mm-hmm. It's probably one of my favorite genres of film.
Yeah, I tend to say that it's one of my favorite genres in film and television, but I have never watched an entire Bond movie. For some reason, he does not interest me whatsoever. So I always kind of shy away from saying that spy stuff is my favorite because I don't watch James Bond.
But I don't think that's so bad because, you know, James Bond is the quintessential, you know, if you go back to the Sean Connery age, it's the quintessential schlocky kind of spy stuff. You then have, like, I consider Pierce Brosnan and on to be the new generation of James Bond because they went a little less schlocky and went towards a lot more action.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's room for both those in that. But there are so many things. And I also consider heist movies and things of that nature to somewhat be espionage because a lot of the same skills are used.
Right. I do enjoy stuff like that. Ocean's 11 is one of my favorites.
And so, you know, I think of Sterling Archer from the TV yep. show Archer. I mean, granted,
not PG-13, but it is one that we really enjoy.
Oh, yeah. But it's spy, but it is kind of more of a slapstick kind of comedy.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
situational.
Yeah.
Ocean's 11, you mentioned.
Right.
You're a
yeah.
huge fan of.
As far as movies go, I really like, I think the first spy movie that I ever bought with my own money was Spy Games with Robert Redford and Brad Pitt.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've been watching on television, we've been watching, well, on Netflix, we've been streaming a lot of Blacklist, which is FBI based, but it deals with a lot of espionage type groups and individuals. And there is a spy presence in there. I liked Chuck, which was a goofy
yes.
spy comedy that also dealt with government agencies being involved in that. But no, anything like that, I threw in What's Up, Tiger Lily, because that was probably one of the first spy movies that I'd ever seen, even though it was a Woody Allen parody of a Japanese spy movie. But What's Up, Tiger Lily is one of my favorite because culinary espionage is real, folks, and it's very serious.
Given an idea really quick of when this came out. So it's 2002, and this is the Axis of Evil is coined by President Bush.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're looking at what, just a few months after 9/11. So the world was kind of in a very tumultuous period, and at least not the world necessarily, I guess, but America specifically.
Yeah, well, it definitely set up pretty much global politics, you know, since then have been affected by it. The United States invaded Afghanistan in a war that is still being fought today, almost 16 years later.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Alderac Entertainment Group released Spycraft.
Which I didn't know that was what AEG stood for. I've seen the AEG moniker and logo on so many things, many board games. In fact, I see what right on a board game right there on our shelves, but I did not know that that's what it stood for. Every time I see Alderac Entertainment Group, because I have seen that
yeah.
listed other places, for some reason, my brain associates it incorrectly with Star Wars because of Alderaan.
Yeah, no,
and that's what I always immediately envision in my head.
I honestly think that's probably why they went to just putting AEG as their logo, because that's what I thought when I first saw it. I was like, Alderaan? Yeah, there's got to be a story
there.
Got to be a story there. But yeah, no, I am a huge fan of theirs, and obviously they are known for their board games nowadays, but, you know, they were involved in the release of
several competing and really, in my opinion, strong RPGs. Stargate SG-1, mm-hmm. which I do believe is, you know, it's a great series. We'll probably touch on that one eventually. But the creator of Stargate SG-1 actually considers the game and the contents in the game to be part of the universe of Stargate. It has additional information in it. So that's pretty awesome.
Cool. Yeah.
The Legend of the Five Rings, which is a wonderful series. They went through, I think, 3 or 4 editions while they were on AEG.
Yeah, I believe that's
right. And now they're bought out by Seventh, what is it?
Fantasy Flight.
Fantasy Flight, thank you, yes. Seventh Seas, and later Swashbuckling Adventures, which have gone on, and John Wick, who was with AEG, has now taken over that title.
Mm-hmm.
And Farscape.
Well, he was the original writer for AEG for 7th Sea, or he had sold it to, I'm not sure the situation there, but he was the original writer, and then he just took it, and they partnered with him, and now he's got John Wick Presents.
Yeah, which is, you know, which this year, in my humble opinion, kind of swept the Ennies at the 2017 Gen Con, so, yeah, big congrats to him. And yeah, Farscape, which is one of my favorite sci-fi franchises. I loved Jim Henson Puppet Works being involved with him. But I mean, these are major titles, in my opinion, for pop culture, and that AEG was involved in them and produced them, I think is.
Well, I think it established them as a pretty big name in the gaming industry, and we'll talk a little bit more about them later. But one of their titles that they released, obviously, was Spycraft. Okay. And I know very little about this until I sat down to kind of look into it. It looks like you have, sitting on the table in front of me, several of the books.
Mm-hmm.
We have never played this together. But and I can probably think of some reasons why, but I'm not entirely sure why. But, you know, it looks... As far as I can tell, Spycraft is the Bond-esque cinematic super spy counterpart to the other kind of half, or the campaign setting Shadow Force Archer, which was released with it. So there's the silver books and the black books.
Yeah. And each has its own feel for the world. I think from what I remember of reading a little bit of Archer, it's a little darker.
Yeah, no, it's the... if the Wikipedia page can be believed, it is the it focuses on it like a global shadow conspiracy in an Earth where psionics are real. It's more mystical. It's a little bit more paranormal, and it focuses on each of the parts of that of the. I believe it's called the Archer. Oh, I can't remember the name of it, like the Archer Contingency or something like that. I can't remember the name of it. Spycraft itself is more the
classic homage to the genre in and of itself.
Right. And all I can think of besides James Bond for the kind of spies that I imagine in Spycraft are all comedy guys like Get Smart and Maxwell Smart, those kinds of guys with their phones in their shoes. And
Well, there's also that feeling, especially if you look at some of the main books, the Splinter Cell games, the Tom Clancy kind of characters. I mean, it covers that entire wide range of bases, but it introduced some new stuff to it, and I think that it changed mechanics, because I mean, again, this is the D20 system based.
Like our last game. And it's funny because we in our current gaming group often talk about leaving the D20 system behind, but we are, you know, going through this for the show, there are so many games that are based on the D20 system, because it really is a good system, and people may not like it, or they feel like they're going away from it, or they want to explore more things, because there are some other really great systems out there that we like.
Oh yeah,
D20 core system was used for so much when it was,
and it was a huge part of gaming history. It opened the door for all these things, because if the D20 system did not exist, would these have just ended up as books, or these have ended up as something else? I mean, that's the big question. And so I'm very happy. And I don't have either I hate the D20 system or they're the people that have that I will only play the D20 system.
Yeah.
I'm not that kind of person. I'm like, you know, the D20 system had such great effects on the gaming market. And a lot of people would not be here if not for it.
Well, yeah, because it provided being, and I know much less about the OGL and the D20 system trademark license or whatever it was called, being something that people could take an idea that they had but they don't have the mind for game mechanics.
Yeah.
But they want to take an established game mechanic that people are familiar with and overlay it with their the world that they want to create. And I think that that's something nice about the OGL and the D20 STL. You know, you can know very little about game mechanics and how to make a game and how to build rules that actually work and are playable.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about that if you have a world to create. And I know other people have done that with the Storyteller system and other things like that. But so I think it's great to see a system, whether you like it or not, this system has allowed a lot of games to come into onto the scene and introduce people who may not be willing to play D&D. Might be willing to play Spycraft.
And that's one of those things with the D20 system. This is something that I've been claiming, and that is that you have to provide a product that is good enough to justify its purchase, you know, so that people aren't having to create their own thing. They look at it and they're like, oh, this is exactly what I want. Oh, it's got all this information that I would have never dreamed of.
And I can use this book that I already have for the core mechanics. Exactly. I don't have to buy a new rule set.
Exactly. Spycraft, I love. I feel like they set out to do it. And it is a spectacular book. So, I mean, the core book is a hardbound, and it has a great aesthetic to it. If you actually are looking through it, it's black and white text on white page with gray and silver. There's actually silver lining in some of the artwork and in the page itself. That really gives it this beautiful aesthetic. I mean, this is a really well-made book. It's easily readable and very easy to follow. And to be honest, I mean, I feel like the layout in this book is better than the layout in 3rd edition Dungeons & Dragons, which is where the origin of the D20 license came from. I think it's brilliant. Not only do you have this core book, but then they put out additional books and so much great information. It's one of those things where you can't help but justify how good this is. A couple things that they did differently, and they would have to. First and foremost, there's the race aspect. In Player's Handbook for Dungeons & Dragons, there are core races that the players take upon themselves. Right. Elves, dwarves, whatever. Now, they have kind of pulled that out of this because this is based a little bit more on real world, to some extent.
This is supposed to be Earth, not... Yeah. It's not a fantasy setting. I mean, there are fantastical elements to the setting, but in reality this is supposed to be humans dealing with global and foreign power.
Absolutely. And so that mechanic of race has gone away, and instead what they did is they put departments in there. I like this because the way it interplays with class. But so each department, you know, there's a research department, there's a wetworks department, there's more of the classic black ops, espionage, never get seen kind of department. So there's all these departments. And then you have your classes, which are things such as, you know, enforcer, the wheelman, all these other things.
Right.
And so I feel like all of a sudden, wow, I can be a wheelman, but instead of just being the guy out working for Black Ops or something, I'm working for the secret division that puts into play new powers and new equipment. So I'm kind of like a test driver.
Right.
And so I think, you know, there is endless possibility in this game where Dungeons & Dragons, there are iconics. I mean, you open up the book and you can't help but say the elves are rangers. Yeah. The gnomes are going to be spellcasters. The dwarves are either, you know, they're going to be craftsmen with their big hammers, and they're going to be decked out in armor as a cleric, paladin, or warrior, whatever. And so in that, you know, in Dungeons & Dragons, there's this element that is always kind of in the background. But in Spycraft, you are opened up into a world of endless possibility, in my opinion.
Right.
Other things, I mean, obviously, modern skills.
Yeah, computers, electronics, things like that.
And defense is a new mechanic in this, which I love, because all of a sudden, getting hit no longer is about what kind of armor or what armor you're not wearing. It's all about class level and other things.
Right, right.
a chase element, which is obviously a big part.
Every spy movie or,
oh my goodness,
or heist movie, I think The Italian Job.
Yeah, absolutely.
Has a famous car chase in it.
My favorite car chase, Ronin.
On a plane.
So spy stuff is over the top. And here's the question that is going to get asked with our next episode. And that is, we're going to be going in for the episode after this one, and we are going to be making characters for Spycraft. And obviously, to me, the question is, does the game do what it sets out to do? Can you make that character that is kind of a little bit over the top, doing all the same crazy stuff you see in the movies or TV shows? So I think that is probably what we're going to be doing next episode. So I hope you all have enjoyed. This is Passion Nerdly. I'm John.
Roxy.
And we are so happy to have you all here listening to us. Thank you very much.
This has been a production of the Southgate Media Group. For more podcasts like this one, head over to southgatemediagroup.com.